Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. It's a sausage fest with more in-jokes than a school reunion. Thanks for joining us. We have two topics to talk about today. Oh. I did have it muted before I checked the levels. We've got Scott Carey, thanks for joining us, online editor of Tech World.
Hello.
Neil Bennett, the editor of Digital Arts.
Hello.
And Don Preston, staff writer at Tech Advisor.
Hi.
I'm Henry Burrell, and we're going to talk, first of all, Mr. Neil Bennett, about Microsoft Surface Pro.
Well, before we talk about the actual product itself, I think we should talk about the launch, which Microsoft grandly cocked up.
So, yeah, they don't have a great track record with launches. They tend to get mocked just because Apple set the bar so high. So what do they do this time?
Well, they decided to launch in Shanghai in China, which, you know, was a sensible move because as well as launching a new product, they're also going to launch their entire line of Surface products into China.
Okay.
Now, obviously, but, you know, China is not known for having the world's best net connection with the rest of the world. So, yeah, they decided we're not going to do an official live stream,
okay.
You know, because of the great, you know, was the Great Firewall of China, or whatever they call it, probably caused some issues. So they thought they'd just do a live blog, which didn't work. They couldn't actually live blog their own event. Us here decided, ended up watching a live stream on some weird Chinese Tumblr-esque social media site, trying to hear what Microsoft VP of whatever he is, Panos Panay, was saying underneath a live translation into one of the Chinese dialects. So, yeah, that was a bit of a cock-up. But then, you know, that was something which I don't think had a major impact on the what people thought of the product. By the time the news came out, people were more interested in the actual thing itself. It's called the Surface Pro. It's not called the Surface Pro 5 because, you know, as the numbers get higher, I think the impact of going, right, this is the new one.
And is it also potentially because not much is new?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like...
Hot take right there.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends who you'd ask, really.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's got the latest chips. It's got faster storage. It's apparently 20% faster overall. But the biggest issue, I think, for a lot of people is the Surface Pro 4 that they bought last year is probably good enough for what they want. The area where they have upgraded it is for artists. And, you know, artists were a big kind of group that they were trying to push the Surface Pro 4 to.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the main audience. They're kind of like the cool, the aspirational audience. You say, right, if I can get these people to use the Surface Pro 4, then everybody else who wants to be wants to think of themselves as creative is going to go and buy this product.
Okay,
this is what Apple have been doing for decades.
I was talking to HP this week about the exact same thing, where they were saying that obviously the way we market a lot of our big workstations and a lot of our dream color displays is for the artists and for the animators, but really it's like less than 10% of our actual market. But those are the stories that we like to tell, and those are the aspirational sort of market that we like to push it on. But really, you can't make a huge amount of money on that smaller market, can you?
No, but it's a lot cooler to say, all right, our products were used in the creation of whatever the latest DreamWorks film is,
yeah,
rather than saying, oh, it Boss helped
baby.
Make you know PBS. Actually, you know, I remember going with HP to Cannes, which you were talking about,
yeah.
And the big production was Over the Hedge, starring
oh, yeah,
a barely remembered animated film with Bruce Willis and Nick Nolte, and who knows.
But in reality, it's getting used by like architects and like
financial services. That's where the real money's made. Mm. That's where all the kind of big workstations go into. But again, no one wants to read a story. A story that's about how much, you know, I don't know, Barclays have used these workstations to make billions of pounds of profit through trading, or here's how it was used to make a cool film. You know, which is kind of the more fun product. More fun story. But yeah, going back to the Surface Pro quickly, I mean, it's, you know, they've got a better pen, so it's better for drawing. It's much more sensitive. You can draw better with it. You can tilt it in a way that you can kind of push it almost flat. So like, you know, what they call a drafting table, my parents would have called a draftsman's table. But our language has moved on since then. It's slightly off flat. So it's better and it's more comfortable for drawing. And there's a new keyboard, which is made of a substance which I've spent the week calling Alcantara.
Alcantara, isn't it?
I mean, I think Alcantara is possibly a Spanish resort awash with cheap booze and poor life choices.
Sounds like a spell from Harry Potter.
Alcantara is the guy that plays for Bayern Munich, isn't it?
I think I was... Say Alcantara. So we've got a problem here.
There we go.
I think it is Alcantara.
It's like a weirdly... it's like man-made, isn't it?
It's fake suede.
Yeah, fake suede.
I'm not quite sure why they're making a big deal of it. But this thing is made of fake suede. It's like, oh, this jacket is made of leather.
A lot of people have been like worried that that's just going to get filthy really quickly. Because if computers are mostly metallic, like laptops and things. You don't really notice when your MacBook is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
But if you've got like a fabric keyboard with your sweaty palms all over it, surely that's not going to last long, is it?
Well, apparently it's used a lot in cars.
Okay.
And, you know, my car's pretty dusty, but that's probably because I've got children, I live in the countryside, and everyone seems to trek in massive amounts of dirt into the car. But, yeah, we'll see. We're gonna have a look at it in a couple of weeks, and I'll report back of actually whether it's any good or not.
From a techie point of view... I wanted to talk quickly about how why it's important that Microsoft is making hardware. I mean, they've been doing the Surface Pro for a little while, but there's also the Surface Laptop, which they released a few weeks ago. Well, not released, it's not out yet. But I'm looking at the pricing, and for a Surface Pro, you're talking about that market where they do make the money. And I presume they're making the money in their high-end version as well, because the Surface Pro starts at $799, but that's with a Core M3 processor, which you're not going to be able to do much serious work on. And it goes up to about $2,500 for the high-end one.
Yeah, they're pretty...
Yeah, and you have to pay extra for the keyboard and for the...
they don't come with it. They don't come with it, do they? The keyboard's $150, I think.
How much is the pen?
Pen's, £90 or something?
I was going to say, if it's three figures, that's ridiculous. But it's not far.
The Apple Pencil's £99.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Then the Surface Laptop is $979. With a Core i5, but it's a bit cheeky because it's the low-power i5. It's not the real thing. And that only runs Windows 10S, which I don't think we've talked about on the podcast before. But, so the Surface Pro will run for Windows Home or Pro. I think it comes with Pro. But, the Surface Laptop only runs 10S, which is a new operating system. We can only download apps from the Windows Store. And I think that's a weird move.
Mm-hmm.
They've been targeting it at... So the education market, where in the US at least Chromebooks are dominant, and also to students. But for £1,000 and a laptop, you basically can't install any third-party applications on, and you can't change the default browser, so you have to use Edge for everything.
Oh god,
Edge is also terrible. See, but it is a big deal, isn't it? Though that Microsoft is making hardware because it failed so miserably in the phone market. Is this encouraging for them?
I think it's encouraging for pushing things forward. I mean, the reason why 2-in-1s got big is because Microsoft made such a success out of the original Surface Pro 3 and then the 4.
Yeah.
And it's something where they built that market. I mean, yes, there have been accusations that they basically built that market by giving away a lot of Surface Pros.
They can afford it.
For free. I mean, that's a rumour where I have no... I have no actual proof on it, but it's something which is much said in the industry.
Yeah.
It's if you want to find the next generation of devices, it's great that Microsoft are sort of developing these things. Not all of them are going to work. The Surface Phone or whatever, this mooted idea of doing a Windows Phone, it's not going to probably be able to take on the iPhone or the or Android. But
that Nokia. Acquisition really went well for Microsoft.
Sorry, that's right. So I was wondering if my phone is buzzing.
I'm just going to stick it on my desk.
Well, he's left the building. I don't know what to do. That's never happened before.
We've never had anyone leave. Now we can say horrible things.
I was
going to
say,
what's
your least favourite thing about Neil? do I keep going? Oh, he's back. He's cool. That's completely thrown me. That's all right. I was going to mention it with the 2-in-1 market. Have you used a 2-in-1 before for like actual work? Because I was at a launch in Berlin earlier this week for Huawei's basically Surface Pro version. They just updated it. It's called the MateBook, a MateBook E. I'm trying to use it for all my work. It does slow down a little bit sometimes.
Is this the one that's like an iPad with a keyboard?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine's got one. He absolutely loves it. Mm. And he uses it for work. And he uses it when he travels.
It's a Windows one, right? It's not
Windows one. Yeah, Microsoft one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's quite attractive. Like, it is like gloriously overpriced and underpowered.
Yeah, does it cost more than the Surface Pro?
The Huawei one?
No, does the Surface Book cost more than PC, basically?
Yeah, it's quite confusing. There's the Surface Pro, which is the 2-in-1, and that starts at $799. Then the Surface Laptop, which runs a kind of crippled version of Windows.
And that's an all-in-one, yeah.
And that's just a proper laptop, that's $979. But then they also have the Surface Book, which is a detachable laptop.
Yeah.
So they got the three now, yeah.
Okay.
And that's like a lot of money. I think the cheapest one of those is like $1,700.
Blimey.
I might be wrong though. Someone's gonna correct me if anyone is listening. So is that the next exciting phase of computing, 2-in-1s, or are we slowed up a little bit? And because smartphones, obviously, they've only been around about 10 years, and everything's accelerated so fast.
They have been phenomenally popular. I mean, you know, to the point where you were thinking, originally when they launched Surface Pro 4, it's just going to be for artists. And then you realise that, you know, our entire international sales team here at IDG has got Surface Pros.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of, because they're very simple and very easy to travel with. I mean, I use an iPad Pro with a keyboard because if I'm sitting on southern trains on the way in the morning and you're kind of in a little cooped up little seat, you need to have a touchscreen. It's just so much easier to use than trying to click around on a little trackpad when you're hemmed in with a billion other people. So, it makes sense to use a 2-in-1 if you're traveling a lot. But it seems like laptops are more popular these days. This is what people seem to be buying.
Yeah.
I think 2-in-1's a good bit of kit. Are Microsoft sort of the leaders in that market, or who's the real big competition? Is it Huawei?
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft do have it with the Pro, the Surface Pro. And then the iPad Pro, I think it's a clever product in that Apple is able to kind of get in on those customers.
Yeah, seldom see people with Neil's setup, though, with the keyboard iPad Pro setup.
It's an expensive setup. Yeah. and it's also a very large device. Like, obviously, Neil uses it a lot for work, and that's why the big screen, it kind of does act like a laptop. Mm. But not many people are going to go out and buy a 12-inch iPad Pro for Netflix.
No, it's the smaller one I see. I see a reasonable number of people sitting on the train using the smaller iPad Pro with the keyboard, like doing their email and stuff like that. People going into the city. They're there next to a much larger bunch of people who are sitting there with a clunky old Lenovo ThinkPad laptops
with the red little thing in the middle of the keyboard.
Yeah, that's my head.
Love it. They sell so many of those to enterprise.
Yeah,
the fastest growing market, I think. This is what companies tend to tell me in interviews. Is the detachable market, like a computer that you can kind of clip the screen off?
Yeah,
you got that exec level guy. He wants to watch stuff on the train and everything, but he doesn't want to carry around something that looks lame. Like CIOs love the 2-in-1s because they get to carry around like a folio. I don't know. That's what I'm told.
Yeah.
I just repeat what I'm told. anything else to say about that? I mean, Apple does have its iPad Pro, but we think at WWDC next month it's going to spec bump all the MacBooks. Is that important for the design industry?
Yeah, I mean, the MacBook Pro is still kind of generation behind, but it doesn't have a touchscreen. Apple doesn't believe that touchscreens are the future. Because I suppose, they seem to design hardware for business class rather than economy. Or, they seem to build everything expecting it's going to be used in some way you've got arm room. Whereas I think Microsoft's very aware that, when you travel around, you're offering cooped up spaces. So a touchscreen is better than a... also, I suppose Apple doesn't want to cannibalize the iPad Pro market by making a touchscreen.
It will never do it, will it? Yeah.
Well, who says, people thought, they'll never launch a phone. And then they launched the iPhone back, when was it, like 15 years ago?
But then, the last thing that they added to the MacBook Pro was the Touch Bar.
Yes.
Which just seems like, adding another annoyance.
Yeah, it's also it's something which requires, you know, all the application makers to actually build support into it, and very, very few have done. You know, I think Microsoft has with Office, and Adobe's done it with a couple of apps. But generally, it's, you know, there's no reason. It's, you're building a, you know, you're updating software or adding new features to software for one piece of hardware. It might change if Apple launch an iMac with a keyboard that's got a touch bar as part of it. That would then make it more, you know, or, and then you could buy that keyboard and attach it to the iMac that you already own, or etc. That would be more sensible. But at the moment, there's barely any support. And those application makers are also being asked to add support for things like the dial that comes with the Surface Studio, and actually works with the Surface Pro as well, which is a little sort of hardware hockey puck shaped thing which you can use to kind of twist and control. So if you're trying, you know, if you've got an, you know, if you're Adobe, for example, and you've got Microsoft saying, can you support this device, which works on a number of different things, and Dell does, it's built into Windows, the support for these hardware devices. Dell's doing its own one as well. And you've got, so you've got quite a lot of devices there that can use that. And then you've got Apple saying, oh, we've got one laptop. Can you build support for a feature that's built on just this one laptop? I think we know where the, you know, Adobe and those guys are going.
And that's encouraging for companies like Microsoft as well, who've been out the hardware game for so long. And now Apple has potentially misstepped with that touch bar, I think, anyway. The only people I've seen using that computer are journalists who have either forked out for one or it's on loan. I've not seen a single one.
I've not seen one.
No, I've never seen.
But then again, that's because, to come full circle, you don't want it on the train, which is where you see all these devices anyway.
Also, designers, it replaces their function keys, and designers use function keys because you always have shortcuts.
Isn't there the thing? Obviously, you can turn down the volume on a Mac function row, but on this new laptop, by default, you have to do two presses to get there. It just kind of complicates simple things.
Yeah, whereas most laptops, you've got up and down volume control. You know, having be able to use a slider using your finger over, you know, using like two buttons to put the volume up and down is not a step forward in technology.
Way worse.
Yeah, and it's just so expensive as well. Yeah. It's like $1,700, I think. Fun times. Thank you. Anything else to add on that, Neil?
Or should that's it. I mean, you're quite right. There's not a huge amount of new stuff with the Surface Pro 5, but we want to see more launches where they all go horribly wrong. So
they are quite funny. I mean, they're a pain for us because we don't know what's going on if you're in the office, but it is also quite funny. Thanks, Microsoft. Quickly go around the room. Neil, are we just scratching the surface or what lies beneath?
I've got no idea what you mean by that.
It never matters.
But I'm going to go with
scratching the surface or what lies beneath.
I'm going to go with what lies beneath because I quite like the Surface Pro 5.
Okay, that's the bad one. But anyway, you got Dom.
Scratching the surface, then. Excellent. If that's the good one,
thank you.
What lies beneath?
Excellent. A terrible film, in case you're interested. Cool. Coming up next, a little bit about film with Cannes and Netflix. Scott Carey, you've been rubbing elbows with all sorts of big wigs and hot knobs down at Cannes, haven't you?
I have. I've been on the croisette this week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's been some controversy between the French cinematic establishment and Netflix, the streaming giant.
So we all love Netflix, but why don't the French?
Yeah, the French aren't as enamoured with Netflix as we are. So basically, Netflix this year has two films in the actual Cannes Festival in the judging. So it's up for awards, like the Palme d'Or and things like that. So you've got The Meyerowitz Stories, which is a Adam Sandler, Ben Stiller vehicle.
Yep.
Sort of,
which sounds bad, right? But apparently,
well, it's made by Noah Baumbach, so it's like a very talky comedy, very can sort of comedy, basically. And then the other film that they've got up is Okja, which is by Bong Joon-ho, Korean director.
Yeah, Dom? Korean.
And basically, around Okja, this is where the controversy sort of came up, because when it was projected for press, it was misprojected. It was in the wrong ratio.
If there's photos and it's really like mobile phone screen aspect ratio, extreme portrait.
And I read the curtains didn't open properly or something.
Yeah, apparently the French press were sort of baying for blood already, and then once this happened, they were full on booing at the screen.
Great.
So, like, some press reported that they were booing the Netflix logo. Some press said that they were booing the like technical issues. Can't really tell from the outside, but what we can tell is that the French cinematic organization, so their version of the BFI, basically, are quite anti-Netflix. And this is because French law dictates that any movie that's shown in theatres has to wait 36 months until it is then put on a streaming service.
Okay.
Which is very anti-Netflix business model, where it wants it on its streaming service as soon as possible. So Netflix decided that they weren't going to screen Okja or Meyerowitz Stories in French cinemas because they want to put it on to streaming services.
Okay.
Which, when you're showing it at Cannes Film Festival...
That's something that's definitely happening, right? It's not going to be in French cinemas.
It's not going to be in French cinemas. So the French press took umbrage with this. The French Film Association, whatever their official title is, took umbrage with this. And Cannes actually ended up coming out with a press release saying that they will not allow films to enter the competition in future years that will not be shown categorically in French cinemas.
Right.
So they've taken quite a strong stand against Netflix in this essence.
So is it reasonable to suggest that neither of these films are going to win any awards?
Well, it's definitely sort of dented their holding in terms of getting awards. Neither would probably have won anyway. I mean, Okja is a very... I haven't seen it, but it sounds a very strange film, even by Cannes standards. It's about Tilda Swinton, who develops a strand of super pigs.
Great, right.
So giant pigs that can be farmed for food, but then a young Korean girl falls in love with the pig, and then it becomes sort of a weird adventure movie where a bunch of people are trying to protect... So animal protectionists and also Jake Gyllenhaal, in a really strange role, is trying to protect the pig, and then Tilda Swinton and all her corporate lackeys are trying to kill the pig.
We've seen an episode of South Park where they work out how Family Guy was made, and it's like sea otters picking balls with random words on them out of a hat. It sounds like that.
It does sound like that. and then Tilda Swinton came out and said, look, we didn't really come here to win awards, it's just a great... honour to actually have a Netflix-produced movie be on the screen at the Palais.
Was she booed for saying that?
No, I doubt it. I don't think
she'd ever get booed for anything that she does.
She's got a good rep.
there's definitely two sides to the coin here. There's obviously a very simple debate to be made. It's whether you side with Netflix and you say that basically these movies... can be screened like straight on Netflix. They don't have to be put in cinemas. And it's just good that they're supporting, you know, mid-range auteurist filmmakers. Or you can take the very French traditional route where you say that these films should be put on the big screen and they should be experienced by cinema goers in that sort of setting rather than in your home. And my favourite thing about this whole incident is how at one of the press conferences of the judging panel, which the president of the judging this year is the Spanish auteur Pedro Almodovar, and also on the panel is Will Smith.
Funnily enough,
they actually fell very conveniently on either side of the fence during the press conference. So Pedro was arguing vehemently that these films, any film in the Cannes Festival, should be put on the French, should be in theatres. And Will Smith said that Netflix is a great thing because it sort of democratizes interesting filmmaking.
Yeah.
So, it sort of depends on where you fall, either side, and I'd love to know where you fall, Dom.
Yeah, Dom loves the film. What do you think?
I'm firmly on the Netflix side of this. I think it's sort of a funny issue because if you look at the sort of films that normally play in Cannes anyway, they're the sort of films that if they do make it into cinemas, they play for a couple of weeks in art house cinemas and no one sees them.
Like
and
Antichrist and things like that.
It's good that those films do make it into cinemas, but actually like Netflix will tout the fact that they can take those films, put them in front of a way wider audience, and people will actually see them. The people who wouldn't go to a small art house independent cinema, who just wouldn't find those films because they're not playing at the multiplexes. So films like Okja, you know, people will see it because it's on Netflix, more people than ever would if it just had a cinema release. And they wouldn't get made otherwise. I mean, the director has made a point of saying he's had the most creative freedom of his career working with Netflix on this film. He's never had anything like it working with any other studio. Because Netflix are much happier to just say, yeah, cool, we want to have the clout of having you as a director making a film for us, do what you want. The only stipulation they had for him was that he had to shoot on digital, not on film. But other than that, they pretty much let him do what he wanted, which is a great thing.
It's exactly where I fall as well. And Ben Stiller was interviewed about this during the festival. He's in the Meyerowitz stories. And he said that Netflix are the only ones making interesting movies in the mid-budget that the studios used to make in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And all of the small studios now have basically either been swallowed up into the machinery of the big Hollywood studios or just been killed off.
Yeah.
Because they now only make movies with, you know, historic IP like Alien or are part of a Marvel franchise. As someone that loves cinema, I think Netflix do a really great job of supporting independent filmmakers and small filmmakers. The problem is, as someone that loves cinema, I love going to the cinema as well. And you can see a very slippery slope argument here that if you start allowing more and more movies to never hit the cinemas, that you're just going to kill the cinema.
Yeah.
And I think this is where the French are coming from, you know, in their own sort of, it's quite, they do it in not the nicest way, really, because they can just be so hardline about these things and so traditional. But I think their heart is in the right place. I think they just need to adapt a little bit. Like 36 months is absolutely ludicrous this day and age.
Yeah, that should hopefully be changing. The speculation is that Macron is going to be pushing to shorten that somehow. I don't imagine they'll allow day and date, which is when it hits Netflix, at the same time it hits cinemas.
Mm.
But I can't imagine 36 months is going to stay in place.
No, for long. And I can't imagine it being cut by anything less than about 24 months.
Exactly, yeah. I think it will end up somewhere sub a year, which is still too long for Netflix.
Yep.
But is at least a bit friendlier.
It sounds like a rule that was built for the DVD VHS era.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've just been, slow to adapt to the changing habits of viewers.
But like this whole narrative and the whole story, it is a good one because it's like, you know, the hardline French elite versus like the young, cool upstart who made it. But are they also a bit more genuinely worried about the fact that Netflix exists as this like behemoth of everything that they thinks wrong with cinema, but then you also have like Amazon has just piled a load of money into American Gods,
which
Neil is familiar with.
Amazon also made Manchester by the Sea.
So Amazon are interesting because they take a really different approach to Netflix, which is they do also make original content. They actually have a film in Cannes as well, Wonderstruck.
Oh yeah,
Todd Haynes. But they are much more open to theatrical releases. So they've had like The Lost City of Z, Manchester by the Sea, The Handmaiden, all of those from the last year are films that Amazon either had some production or distribution role in, but they give them theatrical releases as well as putting them on the video platform.
Those films were Amazon led. Is that where the industry is going to go? A company is going to get behind films but kind of keep it hush hush. Well, Netflix is very front and center. Like, we made this film, I'm going to put it out on the same day.
Yeah, well, like I think you know better than me about this, Dom, but like basically they take slightly different approaches, don't they? Where Netflix will actually like commission and yeah. like support the project, whereas Amazon will come in slightly later, a bit more like a traditional studio or distributor.
Yeah.
A bit more like a money man.
Yeah, Amazon, yeah, they tend to come in more after something's been put together or will just put money in, and they yeah. come in as a distributor and have less of a creative role, I guess, whereas Netflix is more happy to come in at the beginning of a project and
see it through.
Take Although, that old school studio role of really like shepherding the film through from yeah, beginning to end.
But ironically, take basically no creative.
Exactly, yeah,
like,
but
like
without
the studios,
actually
they don't give
putting
notes.
Their foot down on things. Yeah.
I think my concern is that, you know, it sounds like Amazon is just, you know, giving, you know, creating these independent films purely as a kind of PR exercise. I mean, yeah, we're talking, you know, you say it's great that these people are going up against the studios, but if they win, what will go on from, you know, how many big studios are there in Hollywood? Five?
Six, I think, is normally the big six.
Down to about half.
Yeah, and now it's like down to two.
Yeah.
If it's Amazon and Netflix, and it's great while they're supporting independent filmmaking, but if they win and in 5 years' time they think, oh, there's no money in independent films, we're going to stick to making TV shows and, you know, oh, what could, you know, should we make this great artistic film or another series of RuPaul's Drag Race? You know, you're going to, and they go, well, this gets this many viewers.
Yeah.
This, you know, at the moment, there is a lot of scope for these films to be made by Amazon because they want to establish them as serious players.
Mm. That doesn't overly worry me though, because I think Netflix and Amazon, their model is to flood their service with content.
Yep.
And independent films are cheap to make. You know, yep. they can pay, you know, someone like Todd Haynes maybe $2-3 million and like it'd be a small low-key movie. It doesn't need any special effects. It needs a couple of top name stars and you just pay for the talent. Whereas you know, the big studios now have to put up, you know, 300, 400, 500 million to get a film made. So I think they're definitely more in the volume yep. business, but there's also a lot of quality there.
But I suppose, and do they? If, it depends if they get as much money back, because obviously you'll pay your $6.99, your $9.99 a month, and you can get to watch as many of these. You know, do the studios get as much money back from that, from the idea of, you know, when we used to go down to Blockbuster and rent a movie or go to HMV and buy a DVD?
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a concept we don't really talk about, even though, you know, it's, you can go on iTunes and buy the film, you can go on iTunes and rent the movie. We seem to talk about it's cinema or streaming. This middle ground seems to have disappeared.
But it is interesting from a market perspective, because Netflix and Amazon are basically running sort of the Tesco principle, where these independent movies can be loss leaders because, you know, they're not making any money off the movie itself. They're making money off their entire library.
Yeah.
So if they can bring in, you know, a couple of hundred people because they've got a really cool independent film that someone wants to watch on there, that person's then locked into a subscription and then they can get stuck into the rest of the content. So instead of like where the old studio would, you know, take a bet on something low key like Okja and hope that it makes money, it doesn't really matter to Netflix, you know, as long as they can pull in a few net new subscribers, which is why I think the model works a lot better for independent cinema than the traditional model.
I suppose also that, you know, Amazon is trying to upsell you as well. So if it gets you I mean, the current version of the app in my mind can just, I'm not allowed to swear on this, are we? Anyway,
of course you can.
Okay, well, look, Amazon can because, you know, I've got Amazon Prime, I'm looking through all the films I can watch and the TV shows I can watch, and every second thing is trying to sell me, oh, do you want to subscribe to Shudder? Do you want to subscribe to particular channels of content?
But even the service itself, I mean, I know less about the film industry than you guys, but I mean, I subscribe to Netflix, but I don't have Amazon Prime. I think it's such a fragmented service at the moment. Amazon as a company has just got the money to just do whatever they want. For some reason, also $7.99 a month sounds better than £80 a year to me, which I know is stupid.
But it totally does. Yeah.
But then you get like free 1-day delivery. You get, what else do you get with Amazon Prime? You get
some free books.
You get music, something, some of the Amazon Music stuff, I think.
Yep. But does anyone use Amazon Music?
I have no idea. No, they're advertising a lot at the moment. I saw a stat the other day that a ludicrous amount of American consumers are Amazon Prime subscribers.
Really?
Touching 50%.
But I've got Amazon Prime and I've got Spotify because you don't get the new albums on Amazon Music.
Mm, right.
You have to pay for some extra music service if you want anything half decent. So. There are some other things.
They're all hidden away. There's like Amazon Pantry. We can get like, I don't know, your milk delivered.
Well, they're going to do pharmaceuticals.
Really?
They announced this week that they're going to do sort of direct to your door pharmaceuticals, which will absolutely destroy small pharmacy chains.
Yeah, great. What a lovely note to end on.
Yeah, lovely. we came right away from lovely film there to that.
Anything you want to wrap up on?
No, I mean, I think that's it really. And I just think it's a debate that's going to rage and rage. I think next year will be very interesting now that Cannes have taken a strong line on this. So depending on if Macron does manage to change the law in time, it puts Netflix in a pretty tricky situation next year because
they just won't turn up to Cannes.
They just won't turn up.
They've just said it's much less attractive if that's the case. So yeah. They won't bother.
These guys want to win awards. Netflix, did they get nominated for any Emmys this year?
I'm sure they did. These guys want
awards because it absolutely justifies their investment, and they want the hype and the media attention. Yeah. But in the grand scheme of things, they're not going to sacrifice a movie being put on their streaming service for 3 years for the chance of winning a Palme d'Or, which they're probably not going to win.
Yeah.
And the thing is that they can just do all the other film festivals. Cannes is the top dog, but the rest are fine. Like Sundance are fine. They've adapted.
Yeah.
And they can just show stuff out of festivals.
They can show stuff out of festivals. So Cannes this year had 2 TV shows for the first time. It showed David Lynch, former Palme d'Or winner. Twin Peaks, The Revival, and it showed Top of the Lake as well. So it's showing that they're recognising TV as a genuine art form now.
It's also worth noting a lot of the problem here is just that French law, because, say, the Oscars, the Academy Awards, also stipulate that film has to have screened in LA specifically to be eligible. But that's fine because the American... Run. Yeah, it just has to screen in a cinema, and American laws are much less forgiving on day-and-date stuff. So
They did that with the OJ documentary that won the Oscar, right?
Yeah.
Such a good documentary.
Yeah.
On a self-indulgent final note, have you seen Alien Covenant?
I have, yeah. I went to see it a couple of nights ago.
What did you think?
I thought it was better than Prometheus.
That's not saying very much.
Exactly. I thought it was good enough. I just think it's just becoming more and more convoluted, and trying to piece the timeline together now, because it's basically just appealing to really hardcore fans, and I'm not sure the franchise has got much further to go, even though he's slated to make 3 more.
Because the problem they got now is that it's all prequel, but it's kind of also weirdly a sequel because it's explaining things as well. I just don't want them to touch Ripley.
I don't want them to get involved.
The beauty... Please don't. I don't want it to be like David's dad or something. I don't want that to happen.
I don't really care about the mythology. I mean, the first film is a pretty straight, along the line horror movie. Second film is a Western.
Yeah.
I don't need a space opera. I just want to see lots of aliens or in the dark, which is another problem with the Covenant. Most of it takes place in sort of bright lights or daylight.
Yeah.
And it's that's not Alien.
That's the great thing about mythology, though, is when it's mysterious.
Yeah.
And once you start explaining the mythology, it becomes much less appealing. And although fans always strive for those answers, once you get them, I think David Lynch, actually, as we're on Twin Peaks, said that it's like killing the golden goose, the goose that lays the golden eggs.
Yeah.
Once you kill off that mystery, you've killed off your IP, basically, your franchise. I don't really know where it's going to go from here. I did find it interesting that the way that AI in the Alien movies has shifted, so in the first couple of movies, or was it just one of them where the droid is actually the good guy?
It's in Aliens.
In Aliens.
Yes. And then again in Alien Resurrection.
Yeah. And now, mild spoiler alert, the David, the android, is the villain of the piece. And that just shows, I think, the way the public perception about AI has sort of shifted.
So that's how it was in the first Alien.
Yeah.
Ian Holm's character.
Ian Holm is, right bastard. Which may be why they're linking it up that way.
Yeah.
Because, they were evil before, and then they evolved to be just programmed nicer.
Yeah. But, I think that what you were saying, Neil, is that the problem with the most recent Alien movies is that they can't really pick their lane. So I think Prometheus and Covenant both want to be horror movies, they want to be action movies, and they want to do the, deep mythology, the sort of stuff you talk about in your philosophy, undergrad course at uni. and trying to blend all three together just becomes a bit of a mess. And that was the beauty of the first 2 movies, that they were distinctly action western or horror movies, and they were good at it.
Yeah, and it's kind of it makes me slightly worried for the next Blade Runner film. It's if that answers the question once and for all whether Deckard is a replicant or not, then it's over.
It definitely will, because Ridley Scott has a very firm view on which way it goes. He absolutely knows what he thinks, and I'm confident this will make that clear.
I don't care what he thinks.
No, I know. But yeah, that's what this film will do.
Once you release a piece of film, you create a piece of art, you have to let go of what people... perceive it.
I think Ridley Scott, like, he's 79. He's just going to die soon. He's just getting all his ducks. He's just getting all his ducks in a row. He wants to finish everything off. I've Gladiator 2 when it was all a dream.
Yeah. No, they were Russell Crowe for Gladiator 2 once. Totally crazy. It was going to be Russell Crowe being brought back to life by the Roman gods to kill Jesus.
I was joking.
And then he was going to appear, and like it would have a montage near the end of like Russell Crowe fighting in like every war throughout history.
That sounds amazing.
I know. I kind of wish they actually made it, but this was an actual script commission by the studio.
That's bonkers.
That's where it's all going to go. Thanks, guys. That was good.
Awesome.
Slightly off topic, but whatever. It's Friday. Who was talking about this? Scott, Netflix or Netprix?
Netflix.
Neil?
Netflix.
Dom?
Definitely Netflix.
Oh, sweet.
They're going to win.
Yeah. they already have. Yeah. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Say goodbye, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.